From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. It's Here and Now. Coming up, we'll check in on Ukraine, where a fragile ceasefire is in effect.
But first, we got a series of decisions from the Supreme Court today, including a mixed ruling that limits the authority of the Environmental Protection Agency, but leaves the EPA's basic authority standing. There was also a compromise ruling that gives companies more power to head off some class action lawsuits. To find out about these rulings and what they mean, we're joined by Emily Bazelon, senior editor for Slate. She's with us from the studios of Yale University, where she is a law fellow. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Well, let's start with this EPA case. It is confusing. It's not even clear who's coming out a winner here, but what was the case about?
I think basically the Obama administration wins in the sense that this case was about whether parts of the Clean Air Act, the ones that require permits for all sources that can annually emit 100 or 250 tons of a pollutant, whether that part of the Clean Air Act allows the EPA to regulate for carbon emissions. And the answer, practically speaking, essentially was yes. Although you're right, the justification for allowing this that the EPA was using, part of that justification the Supreme Court rejected. So that's the confusing part.
Well, yeah. And if you look at the headlines even about this, USA Today says this is a moral victory for industry and state governments opposed to federal regulation. The New York Times says in victory for Obama, court backs rules on power plants. So who's the winner here?
I'm going to go with the New York Times because I think the key point from this opinion is Justice Scalia, for the majority, says EPA is getting almost everything it wanted in this case. EPA sought to regulate carbon. It said we're responsible for 86% of all greenhouse gases emitted from power plants nationwide. Under our ruling, EPA can regulate sources responsible for 83%. So the difference between 86% and 83% is really small, and that's why this is essentially a victory for regulating carbon.
What does this mean for the White House's new proposal to limit greenhouse gases from existing and new power plants, if anything?
It doesn't directly address that new plan because that relies on a different part of the Clean Air Act that wasn't at issue in this case. But generally speaking, what we are seeing is the court reaffirming its ruling from 2008 that the EPA has the authority to say carbon dioxide is an urgent problem and we are going to nationally address this problem. So in a general sense, it is good news for the new plan as well.
Okay, let's turn to this other case, Halliburton versus the Erica P. John Fund. What was this case about?
This case is about what you have to show if you want to bring a big securities action with a lot of different people against a company you say has misrepresented some important fact, something that would affect its stock price. And the question here is, can you assume, as the courts have done in the past, that if companies misrepresent something, that will be naturally reflected in the stock price because people will find out about it. It will just make them lose a little bit of faith in the company. And the court's answer was, yes, you still can rely on that basic rule, but they are now allowing companies like Halliburton, which don't like these big securities actions, to try to rebut that evidence, to disprove the effect on price earlier on in the litigation.
To stop the suit before it even happens.
Exactly. So these suits, when you have lots of people in them, they're called class actions. And in a class action, a court has to decide whether to certify the class, whether to let everybody sue together. So what Halliburton won here was the ability to try to stop the suit at that early stage.
So this is a case that was being watched very closely by companies and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, even. How wide an effect does it have?
It has a big effect in securities litigation, and it's really a kind of compromise ruling because more and more, in general, the Supreme Court has been pushing a lot of evidence into this early class stage, and that is good for companies. Companies don't like it when big class actions go forward. The earlier they can stop them, the better. And one of Halliburton's arguments is that these kinds of cases are a form of extortion because it's so expensive to fight a class action that companies are tempted to settle. Whether or not that's true, giving the companies a chance to push back earlier is good for the companies.
Now, the court today, Emily, also agreed to hear a case next term involving Amtrak. What's that case about?
That case is about whether the federal government had the power to give Amtrak a chance to write a whole bunch of regulations. And basically, this is a fight over executive authority. What is Amtrak exactly? Is it this private entity which shouldn't be allowed to have this kind of authority over rulemaking? Or is it a quasi-government agency that can be allowed in this early stage to the rulemaking process?
And they're going to be looking at that next term. One thing before we let you go, Emily, Richard Wolff, writing in USA Today, notes that while the rest of Washington may be more and more divided, the Supreme Court is actually more united, if you can believe it. More than half of the cases in this term have had a unanimous decision so far, and the number of these 5-4 split rulings has shrunk. Do you think that this is a court that's becoming more unanimous?
I think on the big cases, the court is still divided, and we should come back to this later in the week when we have the most interesting cases from the term and take a look then.
Well, and we've got a couple of more big cases coming up. What are we waiting for this week?
We're waiting on the ruling about Hobby Lobby, the case that the company that's challenging the contraception mandate in Obamacare.
Right.
And we're also waiting for a ruling on whether the cops can look at everything on your cell phone if they arrest you, even if they don't have a warrant for searching your phone.
And I'm sure we will be talking to you about those cases. Emily Bazelon, senior editor for Slate and a fellow at Yale Law School. Thanks so much, as always.
Thanks for having me.